This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Among communities, among nations, results from confusion in the determination of the nature of a machlokes. We know that there is such a thing as a machlokes l'shem shemayim, and we know that there is such a thing as a machlokes shalei l'shem shemayim. One knows that there is sometimes one is not only entitled to disagree, but one is obligated to disagree. And sometimes even that form of disagreement, as justified as it may be, leads to dissension. And that also doesn't matter. It's something that we're aware of, we know about it, and it has to be done. But more often is the opposite is the case, where a machlokes is shelo l'shem shemayim. The problem is that every machlokes is termed l'shem shemayim. Nobody will involve himself in a machlokes which he will claim is not l'shem shemayim. So whenever you hear, whenever there's a machlokes, you must know that it's in the best of goodwill. And as destructive as it is, it's still with the best of good intentions. Whether it is l'shem shemayim or not, you must determine. You can't rely on the author of the machlokes to determine, because there's no such thing as machlokes. When you hear the machlokes, add to it l'shem shemayim, because everybody turns their own machlokes in as l'shem shemayim. What's important is to know, primarily with ourselves, and certainly in the case of others as well, when is a machlokes l'shem shemayim and when isn't? When isn't it? How do I know that the dispute in which I'm involving myself is really l'shem shemayim? And how do I know when it isn't? Korach was a very great man. We'll see just now just how great he was. You can be quite sure that he believed that his machlokes was l'shem shemayim. The 250 Roshei Sanhedrin, the 250 heads of Sanhedrin that participated with him in the machlokes, were also very great people. And you can be quite sure that they had no doubt whatever that their machlokes was l'shem shemayim. And most people agreed with it. Most people felt it was l'shem shemayim. That was certainly the majority opinion. Were it not that the Torah tells us that it isn't so, we ourselves wouldn't quite know whether it was l'shem shemayim or not. And if a man of the stature of Korach can mistake a machlokes shelo l'shem shemayim for a machlokes l'shem shemayim, then we must know every one of us can certainly do it. And it's important for us to learn how to identify what machlokes we're dealing with. There's a very practical halacha that results from that too. The halacha is that it is permitted to speak Loshon Hora against the Baal Machlokes. Chofetz Chaim paskens, Rabbeinu Yonah paskens, and Shaarei Tshuva. That against a Baal Machlokes, one who causes dissension, one is permitted, in fact, obligated to talk Loshon Hora about him, where that Loshon Hora will affect the Machlokes, where the Loshon Hora might still the argument. One is expected to expose him. One doesn't just keep quiet about it. Because a Baal Machlokes operates that way. A Baal Machlokes thrives on moral people. And the only way that one can in fact expose the Baal Machlokes for what he is to talk about him, to warn other people of him. And one needs to know before one paskens that halacha for oneself, is the person I'm about to talk about, is he involved in a machlokes l'shem shemayim or shelo l'shem shemayim? There's a difference. And that's what we're going to do this evening. One of the very shocking statements in this parsha is a Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Kuf Yud Amud Aleph. The Gemara goes on the posuk, Vayakum Moshe Vayelech El Doson Va'aviro Vayelchu Acharov Zikne Yisrael. And Moshe got up and he went to Doson and Aviron, and the elders of Israel went after him. If we just see this in its context, Korach has just rebelled in a way which undermines Moshe Rabbeinu's position too terribly. He's supported in this by Dothan and Aviram. There's a long history of Dothan and Aviram. This isn't the first time that Moshe Rabbeinu encounters Dothan and Aviram. Dothan and Aviram have been plaguing Moshe Rabbeinu from the very beginning. When Moshe killed the Egyptian who was murdering another Jew, Dothan and Aviram were the ones who saw and told him that they were going to report it to Paro. And it was because of Dothan and Aviram that Moshe Rabbeinu had to flee to Yisrael, had to flee into Midian, and had to stay there for years and years. Later on, with Amon on Shabbos, it was Dothan and Aviram who were causing the problems. Over and over again, wherever there's been a problem in Klal Yisrael, who's been at the bottom of it? Dothan and Aviram. Once again, Korach and who? Dothan and Aviram. Wherever there's a problem. And they incite the entire community against Moshe and Aaron. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, I'm about to wipe them out. Moshe pleads and says, no, only those who are guilty. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, okay, however you want to learn it in terms of our shiur last night, we'll wipe out only those who are guilty, that's Korach and his Dothan and Aviram and their respective families. And then the Ribbono Shel Olam warns Moshe and says, tell everybody to move away from Korach, Dothan and Aviram. Finally, Moshe, your troubles are over. I'm going to create a new form of destruction to eliminate these people. Never will you have another problem from Dothan and Aviram, from Korach. Move away. What does Moshe do? Disobeys the Ribbono Shel Olam. Vayakum Moshe. Moshe gets up. Vayelech el Dothan ba'aviram. And not only doesn't he move away, he goes right to Dothan ba'aviram's front door. What did he do that for? Kasovu, says Rashi, he hoped sheyisu loyponim, that they would do tshuva, that they would apologize, v'loy osu, and they didn't. Once more he goes to endeavor to quell the machlokes before the Ribbono Shel Olam destroys them. Although by allowing the Ribbono Shel Olam to destroy him, he's done his best already. He's pleaded, he's prayed, and the Ribbono Shel Olam has now limited his anger to Korach, Dothan, and Aviram. And in one fell swoop, that eliminates all Moshe Rabbeinu's problems, yet Moshe Rabbeinu still tries to get them to come round. Maybe he can avoid their distraction. Says the Gemara, Vayakom Moshe Vayelech El Dothan Vaaviram. Omar Resh Lakish said, Mikan, from this we see, She'ein machzikin b'machlokes, that one may not be machzikin b'machlokes. Difficult to know how to translate that word. Ein machzikin b'machlokes. One must not take hold of a machlokes. We'll have to see soon what that means. The Omar Rav, because Rav said, Kol ha-machzik b'machlokes, anybody who does take hold of a machlokes, Oiver b'lav, is performing an Isur d'oraisa, an Isur of the Torah, transgression of the Torah. Shenemar, wherefore it says, V'lo yiyye k'korach v'cha'adosu. A little bit further on, there's what the Gemara takes is an Isur d'oraisa, and the Torah says, take these copper pans that were used for the korban of the 250 men, and beat it into a covering for the mizbeach, so that people will remember, v'lo yiyech k'irach v'cha'adosu, and that no one will be again like k'irach and his congregation. Says Rav, that is an isur d'oraisa, v'lo yiyech k'irach v'cha'adosu, and the isur is kol ha-machzik b'machlokes over belav. If one takes hold of a machlokes, and we'll define that still, then one is transgressing a transgression of the Torah. The Gemara is a little bit difficult. If we learn it from that posuk, if we learn from the second posuk where it says v'lo yiyek k'korach b'cha'adosu, then that is the source for the isur. Why does Reish Lakish say mikan, from this posuk, from our posuk of Vayakom Moshe Vayelech El Dothan Vaaviram, and Moshe got up and he went to Dothan Vaaviram hoping that they would apologize, says Reish Lakish, from here we learn she'en machzikim b'machlokes. The Omar Rav, for Rav said from the posuk further on, why do we need both posukim? The truth is we learn it from further on, v'lo yiyek k'korach b'cha'adosu. But it would seem that one has to say that Reish Lakish is teaching us the degree of this isur, that we are not allowed to be machzik b'machlokes, that we know from the posuk further on, v'lo yiyek k'korach b'cha'adosu. There is a prohibition of the Torah that one is not permitted to be like Korach and his congregation. And if one is, one is over an isur. What does it mean to be like Korach b'cha'adosu? comes Reish Lakish with an amazing chiddush. Moshe goes to Dothan and Aviram, says Rashi on the Gemara, Shemochal al Kavodo, even though Moshe is a king and is not expected, in fact not permitted, to forgo his own honor. Here Moshe is Mochal al Kavodo, he forgoes his honor, Vahu Atzmoy Holoch Levatel Machlokes, and he himself calls upon Dothan and Aviram to try and quell the Machlokes. He doesn't send a messenger, he doesn't send a shliach, he himself goes. That's the extent to which one has to go in order not to be machzik b'machlokes. And if Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't have done that, if Moshe Rabbeinu would have sent a messenger, if Moshe Rabbeinu would have sent a letter, if Moshe Rabbeinu, even if the messenger would have been Yeshua, he would have sent Yeshua, imagine, to plead with Dothan v'Aviram, please, we can make shalom, we can forget it all, let's just apologize to Moshe Rabbeinu, do tshuva, and the whole thing will be forgotten. Had Moshe Rabbeinu done that, says Reish Lakish, he still would have been over the isur of the Yiyek Kerach v'Chaadosu. That's not sufficient. That's called, still called Machzik b'Machlekes. You're allowing the Machlekes to continue. You're taking hold of the Machlekes. Nothing but Moshe Rabbeinu himself going to Dothan v'Aviram saved him from the isur of the Yiyek Kerach v'Chaadosu. That's the most amazing concept. Again, let's just summarize it. This is very important that you understand that. The Isur further on is Lo Yiyeh K'Korach V'Chaadosu. It is forbidden by the Torah to be like Korach. Reish Lakish says we see that expressed by Moshe's going to Dothan v'Aviram, Moshe himself, not sending a messenger, but going himself to these hateful people, Dothan v'Aviram, in order to try and get them to apologize. That's the meaning of the prohibition, don't be like Korach and his congregation. Implying that if Moshe would not have done that, he would have been like Korach and his congregation. And that's amazing. That means that his Avera would have been as bad as Korach's, or nearly as bad as Korach's. We're used to seeing what Korach did as the most terrible, terrible Avera, which it was, which resulted in the most terrible punishment, where he swallowed alive into a grave of an earthquake, no possibility for tshuva. And Moshe Rabbeinu, if he just wouldn't have done this, which really one would have thought is already lifting Mishura Saddin, this is more than he's expected to do. He's done everything he could already. Would any of us have blamed Moshe if he wouldn't have taken this last step? Still go and personally call upon Dothan v'Aviram? Would any of us thought of blaming Moshe Rabbeinu if he had sent Yeshua to do the job instead of going himself? And if he hadn't done it at all, would any of us blamed him? The Torah would have blamed him. The Torah would claim that Moshe Rabbeinu was over an isur of machzik b'machlekes, that he would transgress the avera of machzik b'machlekes. What is the nature of all this machlekes? It means, we see from here, that the machlekes of Korach was very subtle. This wasn't something as obvious as it appears on the surface. This was very subtle. Because if it was as obvious, no way could the Torah compare, could the Gemara compare Moshe Rabbeinu's not going to call on Dothan v'Aviram to the machlokes of Korach. What have the two got to do with one another? One is a minute oversight which normal people would not even consider an oversight, and the other is a serious undermining of the authority of the king. How can they be compared, these two averas? Yet the Gemara does compare them. Which means that Moshe's Avera would have been bigger than we thought, and Korach's Avera was smaller than we thought. In trying to understand the greatness of the generation, of this generation, it's important to go through the Baalei Musar, take one through a step-by-step process, because one can't just look up to that generation and in one step try and appreciate who they are. About man, it says, the Ribbono Shel Olam created man a little less than God himself. That's what a human being is, just less than a God. When the Malachim asked the Ribbono Shel Olam, what is this creature you're making, the Ribbono Shel Olam said, don't ask so condescendingly. His wisdom is greater than yours, this Bria, this creation that I'm making. Who does that refer to? That refers to Moshe Rabbeinu. No, it refers to ordinary people. It refers to humanity. Not even to Jews. Not to Talmidei Chachamim. Not to Jews. not to Einstein and not to Beethoven and Bach, to ordinary human beings that you see in the street. Vatachasreyu me'at me'elukim, a little bit less than God. And chochmosu merubo mechochmaschem, their wisdom and potential is greater than that of the angels. Compare the man in the street now with a genius. Compare the man in the street with a Bach and a Beethoven or an Einstein or a Newton. And look what we're talking about. The man in the street is already Batachasreyu Me'at Me'elukim, is a little less than God. And what is an Einstein? Just look at that gap. And compare an Einstein to Agadol Yisrael, the Havdil. Compare their conduct. Compare their morality. Compare their incisiveness. Compare their depth. Not just their intellectual brilliance. The depth of humanity, who they are as people. The stature. You don't compare an Einstein to a Chofetz Chaim. Compare an Einstein to any of our Gedolei Yisrael. Can we? Look at the gap. And the Gedolei Yisrael of our generation, do we have a Chofetz Chaim? We don't. Do we have a Vilna Gaon? We don't. Where are all our Gedolei? We have wonderful Gedolei, but they'll be the first to admit they're not Chofetz Chaims. Chofetz Chaim was only one or two generations ago. We don't have such breeds anymore. They don't exist anymore. And what was the Chofetz Chaim compared to a generation before him? Just the same as our generation is compared to the Chofetz Chaim. And so it goes back. We can't conceive of one generation ago. We can't conceive of the generation of the Briskerov, the Chazanish. These are people who died 20 years ago, 30 years ago. They're already beyond us. It's not possible. Nothing I could say to describe them could possibly give any of you an inkling as to who they really were. The extent of their godliness is beyond our imagination, because we've never been exposed to anything like it. As we've said before, it is possible for a human being to imagine differences in degree. If I show you some water that's 50 degrees centigrade, you can imagine what water at 90 degrees centigrade is like. But if I show you water at 50 degrees centigrade and you've never seen steam, you can't imagine what steam is like. You can't imagine that boiling process. You've never seen it. It's a different thing. Steam is not water. If I can show you a great man, you can appreciate a greater man. But to show you an ordinary person, for you to appreciate a Godel, you can't. To show you a Godel of our generation and ask you to appreciate a Godel of one generation ago, Arab Shimon Shkop, Arab Baruch Be'er, not possible. And two generations ago, Arab Chaim Soloveitchik, Abbe Salevi, the Rabbeim, a little bit further, Arab Chaim Valozhne, Arab Yisroel Salanter, Arab Zundel Salanter, Arab Vilna Gaon, which is only a couple of hundred years ago. Right way out of our, doesn't come onto our radar screen at all. We don't have the kelim to be able to conceive of this at all. And we've said often, I think only last week, therefore beware of biographies. We need them, because without them a lot of richness of the culture of Yiddishkeit would be lost. But you must know that they're just fairy tales. The person writing them, never mind the person reading them, hasn't got a clue as to what he's talking about. And therefore, very often, the stories are also not accurate, because they haven't been fully understood and they haven't been fully conceived. Going back to the time of the Gemara, Rabbi Zeira says that if we're like human beings, the previous generation was like angels. If they were like human beings, we're like donkeys and not like the donkey of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyer. And we discussed in the previous shiurim, that means that accurately. Just as a donkey cannot understand a man, no matter what biographies you'll give him. Go and write in donkey language all the biographies of all the human beings you want to, and give them to the donkey to read. He will never understand a human being. So if an angel will write biographies of angels, it won't help us understand what an angel is. You can't understand what an angel is. It's in a different area. So, says Rabbi Zeira, we cannot understand one generation before him. And so it goes. Generation upon generation. There's a Rabbi Yishmael in the Gemara who says that his father and his generation was like gold and they like sand, like dust. That's the difference. Not the difference between sand and silver, or between sand and copper, or between sand and lead. No, sand and gold. That's the different extremes. just as one who has always dealt with sand, with clay, doesn't understand Lashem Gold, he doesn't know what it is. So one who's dealt with Rabbi Shmuel's generation couldn't understand what his parents' generation was. Different field. Over and over again we see this. It's not possible. It's completely beyond us to understand. If we take that process further back to the time of the Tanakh, look who we're talking about now. Shlomo HaMelech, HaDavid HaMelech, HaNosan HaNovi, HaShoel HaMelech, HaShmuel HaNovi. Who are we talking about? What are we talking about here? And go back a little bit further. A Yehoshua, a Moshe, and their generation. Now we're dealing with the cream of the cream. There was never ever again a generation like this. Never ever. From there on it was downhill all the way. And who are these people, says the Torah in the beginning, in the introduction? Nesiei Edo, Kiriei Moed, Anshei Shem. Princes of the community, those who are always called to meetings, the ones who are consulted on every matter, Anshei Shem, men of great stature. They were the cream of that generation. This is the top of the top that we're talking about. One of whom was Korach. So the first thing we can see is that the way we understand Korach's argument is not the way it was. It's number one. There's no way that we could imagine Chas v'Sholem, a Chofetz Chaim, getting involved in a Korach kind of argument. We couldn't imagine such a thing. There's no way we could imagine Rabbi Yisrael Salanter getting involved in such a machlokes, Rabbi Simcha Zissel getting involved in such a machlokes, Rabbi Tzela Peterburger getting involved. We can't imagine such a thing. Of course not. Go and compare Korach to that. There's no way you can compare. Just as we cannot understand the statue of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter today, so Rabbi Yisrael Salanter couldn't understand the statue of one or two generations before him, certainly not of a man of the stature of Korach. We're dealing with giants beyond our understanding here. So how are we going to understand their machlokes? We can't. But we can try and gather enough insight for it at least to cover the area that affects us. Just enough understanding, enough superficial leanings, just to be able to learn the lessons we have to learn from it. But the machlokes wasn't what it looked like. And the second thing one begins to see, that we're dealing with such subtleties, that had Moshe not gone to call on Dothan v'Aviram, it would have been as serious as Korach's machlokes. As serious. Rabbi Yerucham is medayik in a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Kol machlokes shehi l'shem shamayim. Mishnah in the fifth parak of Pirkei Avos. Any machlokes which is l'shem shamayim, soifo l'hiskayim. It will carry on, it will last. V'she'ena l'shem shamayim, ein soifo l'hiskayim. And a machlokes which is not l'shem shamayim will not last. We have to understand what that means. Rabbeinu Yonah says a machlokes l'shem shamayim continues. And the people continue arguing for many years and enjoy it. The machlokes shelo l'shem shamayim, they kill one another. Their argument destroys them. It doesn't go on forever. Hezui machlokes shehi l'shem shamayim. What is an example of a machlokes which is l'shem shamayim? Zoi machlokes hilul v'shamayim. So machlokes of hilul and shamayim is an example of a machlokes l'shem shamayim which carried on and on. V'she'ena l'shem shamayim, and a machlokes which is not l'shem shamayim. Zu machlokes Korach v'chol adose. That's the machlokes of Korach and all his community, which is very interesting. We tend to think that a machlokes that gets finished shows that there was nothing to argue about in the first place. We think that a machlokes that goes on and on is a bad sign. A machlokes that goes on and on means that the machlokes has substance to it. A machlokes which starts and ends usually in the self-destruction of one or two of the parties, that's a machlokes that should never have started. That's a destructive machlokes. So we see already there's nothing wrong in machlokes. There's nothing wrong in differing opinions. Not even is there nothing wrong in differing opinions, but the Torah wants to see it continue. There's a special bracha. What is the bracha you give to two people who are having an argument, a machlokes l'shem shamayim? The bracha is, may it continue forever. That's the bracha. Strange. And if you'll give two people who are having an argument and you'll say, my bracha to you is that this should cease, that's a klola, that's a curse. That means it's going to be self-destructive. The second interesting thing is that it doesn't quote the cases, it quotes the Balei Machlokes. doesn't give an example and say the machlokes over such and such is an example of a machlokes l'shem shemayim, and the machlokes over the kahuna in our sedra is a machlokes shalei l'shem shemayim. No, brings the names. The machlokes of Hillel and Shammai are all machlokes l'shem shemayim, and the machlokes of Korach and Adosai was not l'shem shemayim. That implies that if it was l'shem shemayim, it wouldn't be criticized. The content of the machlokes itself is not what makes it wrong. They were entitled to argue over it. The criticism of the Mishnah is that it was shalei l'shem shemayim. That was the criticism, not the content. Doesn't say what's an example of machlokes shalei l'shem shemayim, the machlokes of the kohuna. No, it was the machlokes of Korach. It was the way he argued, not the substance of his argument, and not the cause of his argument. What he was arguing about would appear to have been acceptable. But there's a way to do it. And Korach didn't feel that way. Korach's argument was shalei l'shem shemayim. In that case, we begin to see our person, so great as Korach, should have got involved. What he was involved in? Okay. What was he involved in? Was he involved in the machlikis where he wanted money? Was he involved in machlikis where he wanted honor and recognition? That wasn't the essence of it. He wanted responsibility. He wanted the opportunity to serve as a kohen. He wanted the opportunity to serve as a nasi. He felt he'd been overlooked for a position of responsibility, not honor. That's not what it was about. Korach had enough kovod. Korach had enough honor, and he had enough power. He wanted more achrayus. He wanted more responsibility. He felt neglected in terms of the responsibility that he was fit to take and hadn't been given. That puts a different light on it all of a sudden. We don't mind such machlokes. Imagine a person comes along and will claim, a person in the base of Medrash will say, I feel upset, I don't have enough responsibility here. Why aren't I given more to do? Why is so and so given so much to do and I'm never given anything to do? Halavai, everybody should argue like that. It would be wonderful. We're not going to get upset about such a thing. That was Korach's argument. Why are you and Aaron taking it all? Not all the glory. Keep the glory. Give us also responsibility. We want to come closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We would like to serve as Kohanim. Do you think it was so easy to serve as a Kohen? It was difficult. Tremendous Mesiras Nefesh had to be there. Tremendous dedication. Doesn't matter, says Korach. We want that too. Why should you have it all? It's a very fine argument. The only problem is, says the Mishnah, it was Shaloi L'Shem Shemayim. That's all. And Korach believed that he was justified. Korach believed that he was as fitting as anybody else for that responsibility. The fact that he believed so is clear from the extent to which he's prepared to give his life for it. And the 250 men, when the Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, right, take the Ketores, you've seen the Ketores kill Nadav and Avihu already, you've seen what happens when the Ketores is brought by somebody unqualified. If you feel that you're qualified, take the Ketores into the Mishkan, let's see what happens to you. They did it. Why? They were sure they would win. They were quite sure that it was 100% in order and that they were as qualified as anybody else to do the job, and that the Ribbono Shel Olam would demonstrate that. They had no doubt. And Moshe Rabbeinu said to Korach, watch and see what's going to happen. You're going to be destroyed. Korach's not worried. He knows he's right. Wasn't in doubt as to whether he was right. He knew he was right with absolute certainty. He also knew the people that are descended from him. Shmuel Hanovi is a descendant of Korach. He realized he's not going to be destroyed, and he must be of a worthy lineage. And there's no reason, therefore, that he shouldn't be given similar responsibility or equivalent responsibility to some of the other people. And all the years he kept quiet. First job goes to Moshe. He's prepared to accept that. Moshe is greater than me. Second job goes to Aaron. Prepared to accept that too. They're older. They come from one of the older brothers. It is Rashi says in the beginning of the parasha, when it came to the appointment of Elitzophon ben Uzziel, who became the Nossi of the Bnei Kahat, of the section of Kahat, that's when he got upset. And he said, Amram had two sons, had several sons. I'm the son of Yitzhar, who is the second son of Amram. And therefore, in terms of seniority, I should have got the next vacant position of responsibility. And I was overlooked for that. That's what upset Korach. So in definition, the machlokes of Korach, what Korach did wrong, was that it was shelo l'shem shemayim. That's it. Had he done it l'shem shemayim, it would have been in order. He, of course, thought it was 100% l'shem shemayim. And this is how where we have to be so terribly careful. A man as great as Korach was sure that it was l'shem shemayim, and the Torah gives evidence it was not l'shem shemayim. How do we know? What's the test if a machlokes is l'shem shemayim or not? If Moshe would not have gone to Dothan v'Avirom, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, his Avera would be v'al tiyeh k'Korach v'cha'adose. Don't be like Korach and his congregation. Let's now translate that. Since we now know what Korach and his congregation did wrong. What did they do? Shelo l'shem shemayim. They operated without it being for the name of God, for the name of the Ribbono Shelo. It was for themselves. That's what they did wrong. So let us now apply that. Had Moshe not gone to Dothan v'Avirom, he would have been validly accused of being involved in a machlokes shelo l'shem shemayim. That's what it means. Now let's understand it. It's interesting in the Mishnah, when it refers to a machlokes l'shem shemayim, it refers to the machlokes between Hillel and Shammai, the two participants in the machlokes. When it refers to the second machlokes, the machlokes shelo l'shem shemayim, it doesn't say the machlokes of Korach and Moshe. The machlokes of Korach and his congregation. Just the one side of the machlokes. Moshe is not involved. Had Moshe not gone to Dothan and Avirom, that Mishnah would have read machlokes Korach v'Moshe. What is a machlokes shelo l'shem shemayim? The machlokes of Korach and Moshe. It was only because Moshe went to Dothan v'Avirom that he was able to exclude himself from this and not be over the avera of v'al tiyeh k'Korach v'cha'adosoi. Because he went there, that's what pulls him out of that Mishnah. And the Mishnah remains a machlokes of Korach and his congregation. Moshe is not included. He was not involved in that avera. Korach's avera was shelo l'shmo. Moshe did it l'shmo. They can't be compared. This was a machlokes where on Moshe's side it was l'shem shemayim, and on Korach's side it was not l'shem shemayim. Why does it all hinge on this one step? Getting up before you move away, just going once more to Dothan v'Avirom in the hope that they'll apologize. What's the essence of shelo l'shem shemayim? The Gemara says in Brochus Daf Yudzayin, Margelo befume derove. It's a pearl in the mouth of Rava, pearl of wisdom. Tachlis chochme, the purpose of wisdom, is tshuva u'maisim tovim. It's constant improvement of one's actions. For a man to sit and learn, shelo yehi odom kore v'shoine, you don't have a man who learns and Torah and Mishnah, Gemara, uveyit be'ovi v'v'imoy, and he kicks his father and his mother, uve rabbi and his rebbe, uve mishu hu godol mimenu b'chochme v'minyan, and somebody who is at a greater authority than him in wisdom or in number. That there shouldn't be. The purpose of Chochmah is fine deeds, good deeds. And that needs proper behavior. As it says, Reishis Chochmah Yiras Hashem, the beginning of wisdom is Yiras Hashem, fear of God. Seichel Tov L'chol Aseihem, good intellect for all who do them. La'osim Lo Ne'emar, says the Gemara. It doesn't say for those who do. It's not good enough just to do. Ela lo'iseihem, that means lo'isim lishma, v'lo lo'isim shelo lishma. You've got to do the mitzvahs lishma, not shelo lishma. V'chol ha'isa shelo lishma. And anybody who learns Torah, or does the mitzvahs not lishma, noyach lo'i shelo nibra. He would have been better off never being created. We're dealing with fire here. The Torah is not something neutral. The Torah is something, if handled correctly, it does the world of good for one. And if handled incorrectly, noach lo shelo nivra, one would have been better off never having been created. There's no worse curse than that. Imagine going up to a person and saying, you know what? Never mind, we would have been better off without you. You would have been better off had you never been created. There's nothing worse you can say to a man. That's what the Gemara says. A person who learns shelo lishmo asks Tosfos. But we've learned elsewhere, La'olam yasek odom b'teiro v'mitzveis afilu shelo lishmo shemitzev shelo lishmo b'lishmo. Haven't we learned elsewhere that one should always involve oneself in Torah and mitzvahs, even if one is not yet on the level of lishmo, of doing it for the Ribbono Shel Olam? Because once you're into things, you're doing it already, mitzev shelo lishmo b'lishmo. By doing it not lishmo, you'll come to do it eventually lishmo. Why are you doing... People say often, you know, this person is using Torah as a crutch. He has a psychological problem, so he's become frum. To which my first answer is, if the person is frum, then I deal with the question. If the person is not frum, then my answer is, not a bad crutch. You can think of worse crutches. Who says that that's such a terrible thing to use Torah as a crutch? That's Leilam Yasek Odom B'Torah Shalei Lishmo. They are right and I am right. They are right, it's a criticism. That's not how Yiddishkeit is meant. One isn't meant to use Torah as a crutch. One isn't meant to use it as a means of honor, as a means of self-esteem, as a means of feeling a little bit better than everybody else, as a means of solving psychological problems. That's not what Torah is for. But if you do, from that will come Lishmo. Eventually you'll come right. But here the Gemara says, no, you'll be better off not born. Yesh Loimer on his Tosfos. The Hocha Mayrish Eina Loimed Ela Lekanter Chaverov. Here it's talking where his learning is to undermine his friends. The Hocha Mayrish Loimed Amanat Sheyechabdu. And there he's learning because he wants some COVID. If you're learning to make yourself feel better, that's not as it should be, but it's better than nothing. But if you're learning to make somebody else feel inadequate, then you're better off never having been created. If the purpose of your learning is to undermine others, that you can't have. That better off you had never been created. And there you have the essence of Shaloi Lishma. Shaloi Lishma is a situation where two people are arguing and the one wants to annihilate his opponent. That's Shaloi Lishma. If it's Lishma, how does it work? So you have also in Brochus the famous Gemara of Hanu Bir Yoni Davu B'Shavvuset Rabbi Meir Davu Kam Tzarule. There were some wild people who were in the community of Rabbi Meir, and they used to cause him tzoros. It's not a new thing that Rabbonim have to have tzoros sometimes in some shoes. Even Rabbi Meir, they made his life a misery. Have a koboy Rabbi Meir rachmi yeloi keiched delimtu. So Rabbi Meir davened that they should die. Tried everything else. Eventually he couldn't. It was interfering with his work. And he was mispalot to the Ribbono Shel Olam that they should die. Amrulei Bruria Devisu. Bruria, his wife, heard this tefillah and she said, "My daitach, I know the basis of your tefillah. Mishum dichtiv yitamu chatoim. May the sinners be destroyed." So you're praying to the Ribbono Shel Olam that the sinners will be destroyed. But let's read it carefully, my husband, says Bruria to Rabbi Meir. Mik siv chaitim. Does it really say sinners will be destroyed? Chatoim ksiv, sins will be destroyed. V'oid, and furthermore, shvil the sefer dikro, read until the end of the pasuk, she tells Rabbi Meir. U'rashoim oid einom. Then there will no longer be rashoim. Kivan di yitomu chatoim, once the sins have been destroyed. Rashoim oid einom, they will no longer be wicked. Not that there will no longer be rashoim, she learns chat in the pasuk. U'rashoim oid einom, and they are no longer rashoim. Which is the accurate translation. Once they've ceased to sin, they are no longer rashoim. You should be praying that they should do tshuva and they should become finer mention and not be rishayim anymore. What are you praying that they should die for? He accepted, prayed that they should do tshuva, and they did. The answer of any rov is having trouble with his gaboy. But here we see the opposite. A machlokes l'shem shomayim. You don't want to annihilate your opponent. You want to annihilate your opposition. There's a big difference. When a machlokes is l'shem shomayim, what does it mean really? What is most important to me if I'm arguing and I'm convinced that I'm right and I'm convinced that this is the MS, this is the truth, and you're making a terrible mistake and it frustrates me that you can't see the incorrectness of your attitudes? What do I really want? What am I driving for? That you, my friend, should see it my way. That you should say I'm moideh. That will give me the biggest thrill. I agree, I accept. That's what I'm driving for. I'm not driving to destroy you. What pleasure will I get out of that? I want your admission that I'm right. I want the two of us to see the same way. That will make me feel still more secure. And that will increase our friendship. That's what I want. I don't want to destroy you. Bruria says to Rabbi Meir, you don't want to destroy the Rishoyim. If you're working for the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's God's business who lives and who dies. Your business is just that the Rishoyim should become tzaddikim. So you should be mispalel for that, not for their destruction. Tosfos says, when it says that a person is better off never having been created than learning shelo lishmo, that's when he seeks the destruction of his adversaries. That's what cannot be tolerated in Torah. That's when it's not for the sake of emes, when it's not for the sake of truth and for the sake of machlekes l'shem shemayim. But where two adversaries, where a person is learning shelo l'shem shemayim, he wants to feel good, but he's not out to destroy anyone. Good. Let him use it as a crutch a while. Not so serious. If Moshe Rabbeinu would have left one stone unturned in his effort to get Dosan and Aviram to see it his way, he would have been accused of machzik b'machlekes v'lo yiyeh k'kirach b'cha'adosu. If a finger can be pointed at an individual, that you've left one stone unturned to try and convince the other side, not destroy the other side, convince the other side. If there's one stone unturned, we're going to accuse you of a machlekes shelo l'shem shamayim. Why didn't you try that? Because really you didn't want him to agree with you. You want him destroyed. You want him to trip up on his own mistake. You don't want him to come around to the MS, to the truth. If you did, you would have gone to the very end. You would have left no stone unturned. So this is the Gemara, it says Reish Lakish. Had Moshe Rabbeinu not gone to Dosan v'Aviram and tried this one last time, that would have been machzik b'machlekes. He would have been accused of doing what Korach did. The substance of Korach's argument was in order. It was that it was shelo l'shem shemayim. He did it by undermining Moshe, not by endeavoring to get Moshe to agree with him, not by trying to persuade Moshe, but by undermining Moshe. That was what was wrong. Moshe, had you not gone to Dosan v'Aviram, you too would have been undermining Dosan v'Aviram, and your name would have appeared in that Mishnah together with Korach. It would have said, what is a machlekes shelo l'shem shemayim, a machlekes Korach and Moshe, chas v'sholem. But it doesn't appear that way, because Moshe took every step to try and bring Dosan v'Aviram round. I want you to live, Dosan v'Aviram. I don't want you to die. All the tzoras I've had from you, good, that's my job. But that you should die is not what I want. I want you to come round and to see the emes and to serve the Ribbono Shelam properly. That's what I want. And once more, before you die, I'm going to try and achieve that. This business of L'shem Shemayim and Shalei L'shem Shemayim places tremendous responsibility upon us. And I want to very briefly learn with you a small section of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. It explains a very important principle. It's clear, says Rabbi Yisrael, in Siman Kaf Tes of Ovi Yisrael, that if one performs a mitzvah the way one wants to oneself, but not in accordance with the halachas, one isn't meticulous. That mitzvah doesn't count. Even though you've got the best intentions, it's L'shem Shemayim, it doesn't count. You take a lulav and esrog, for example, and in the halachas, the lulav and esrog is not quite right, but they're very beautiful and they're very expensive. And you're doing it L'shem Shemayim because you think this is the best lulav that there is, but alpi halacha, it's a possible lulav, it's no good. That doesn't count at all. You get no schar for it at all, nothing. What happens if one does a mitzvah shelo l'shem Shemayim? One does it and it's not 100% for God's sake. One's enjoying it a little bit as well. People are noticing how frum you are. You get a bit of nachas from the mitzvah too. Says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that depends. If you have subjected your action away from your kavanah, then it's in order. If you allow your action to follow your kavanah, it's not in order. What does that mean? That means if you follow the mitzvah 100% according to all the meticulous details laid down in Shulchan Aruch, that shows that in action you're behaving at least as if it's L'shem Shemayim. The Yisrael Salanter here is using some basic behaviorist psychology. That if you go through the motions of doing it L'shem Shemayim, ultimately you'll come to do it L'shem Shemayim. The difference is when a person is doing it Shelo L'shem Shemayim, he's going to do it in a way which expresses that, which expresses his own. If a person wants to do the mitzvah of Lulav and Esrog so that everybody will see him, when he goes to choose his Lulav, he's going to look for the tallest one. He's not going to look for everything else. When he buys his tefillin, he's going to look for the biggest ones. That's not. But if he goes And really he's doing it because he wants people to think that he's a Frumi Yid. And what does he do? He goes, he learns through the halachas before, he goes through the Shulchan Aruch every Seif carefully with the Mishnah Brura, and he knows exactly what to look for. And now he's choosing his tefillin, he's choosing his Lulav and Esrog, and he wants it to fulfill all the requirements of Shulchan Aruch. Doesn't care if it's big, it's not big. He wants it to fulfill all the requirements of Shulchan Aruch. Nobody knows that deep down, buried in his conscience, is a feeling that it's Shiloh L'Shem Shemayim. He's not doing it for the Ribbono Shel Olam, he's doing it for himself. Still better than not doing it at all. Shemitoch Shiloh Lishmo Bo Lishmo. As long as one is going through the motions of Lishmo, I'm doing it the way the Shulchan Aruch says, not the way I want to do it. I've subjected my actions to the Shulchan Aruch, to the Torah, and the fact that my intention doesn't correspond with my actions, something's going to crack up eventually. Either my actions will crack, or my kavana will crack. Rabbi Yisrael is mechadesh when that happens. When your intention, when your motivation and your action doesn't tie up, your motivation will crack, not the action. The action will continue, and eventually your motivation will change. That's pshat in the Gemara, shemitoich sheloi lishmo, bo lishmo. By doing something shelo lishmo, eventually you will come to do it lishmo. It's an amazing chiddush which the psychologists haven't yet learned. However, if one does the mitzvah not according to Shulchan Aruch, but one makes one's own Shulchan Aruch, one does it the way I want to do it, one's an amoritz, one's never looked at the Shulchan Aruch inside, and one's going to choose a luluf. What are you choosing? What are you looking for? You're looking for the things you like. That's shelo lishmo. And that's never going to come lishmo, because there you have not subjected your actions to the Shulchan Aruch. Your actions are expressions of your motivation, and it reinforces your motivation. And your motivation will never crack up. Your shelo lishmo will get worse and worse and worse as you go along. And he answers Tosfos' question with this. He seems to suggest that it's an alternative answer. I think it's the pshat in Tosfos. In the pasuk that we had in the Gemara, it says, Lo'isim lo'ne'emar elo lo'iseihem. Gemara in Brach, Stati Zayin. Reishis chokhme yiris Hashem, seichel toiv l'chol oiseihem. Good intellect for all who do them. Lo'isim lo'ne'emar elo lo'iseihem. What does it mean? Lo'isim lishmo v'lo'i lo'isim sh'lo'i lishmo. Here we're talking about doing it lishmo. And what does the Gemara then say? V'chol ha'oise sh'lo'i lishmo. And anyone who acts, who does sh'lo'i lishmo. Neach lo shelo nivro, would be better off not having been created. Not anybody who has the kavona of shelo lishmo. Have the kavona of shelo lishmo, good. We're all a little bit like that. The important thing is, how do you do it? Is that kavona, is that motivation evident in your actions or not? If your actions are shelo lishmo, you're better off not having been created. But if your actions are lishmo, says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, even if your internal motivations are not so 100% lishmo, then mitoch shelo lishmo bo lishmo. Eventually, it will come right. But where it says Lo'ilam Yasek Adam B'Toyro of Mitzvahs Afilu Shelo Lishmo, that doesn't say you act Shelo Lishmo. Yasek Adam B'Toyro of Mitzvahs, you're dealing in Torah with the motivation of Shelo Lishmo. It will come right. It will come Shemitok Shelo Lishmo Bo Lishmo. But that principle, firstly, is a comfort to ourselves, that while it's not easy to achieve perfectly pure motivation, not easy at all, we at least know how to set about it. The way to do it is to pretend that we have perfectly pure motivation. And some people say that's dishonest. I can't do that. That's not dishonest at all. That's education. Education is training a person to do more than he feels like doing. That's education. That's what a trainer does. That's what an educationalist does. Get the external actions to be a little bit ahead. You don't quite feel like it, but one thing is, act as if you are doing it lishmo. 100%, you act on the basis of the Shulchan Aruch, not on the basis of your own cheshbonos, of your own calculations. That action, therefore, will be kosher at least. And from that action will come lishmo. Secondly, it also explains our concept here this evening, that there are certain halachas that govern machlokes. One of the halachas is lo lahachzik b'machlokes. That means not to take hold of the machlokes and to use it to strangle your opponent. It's one of the halachas. A halacha in a machlokes is you've got to do everything you can to bring your opponent round to your way of thinking. And if you leave one stone unturned in those efforts, that's an issu d'oraisa of lo yiyeh kekirach v'cha'adosu. You're not permitted to do so. What we're asking here, we're not testing motivation. We started off the shir by asking, how do you know? Machlokes l'shem shemayim, not l'shem shemayim.
Can I know even in myself? Can I really analyze myself to such an extent where I can say of myself, this is a machlekes l'shem shemayim? Who has that confidence in their own self-analysis? And certainly, how am I going to analyze somebody else's machlekes? Am I going to analyze and say, this is l'shem shemayim, this is not l'shem shemayim? On this one I can talk Lashon Hora, on this one I mustn't. How can I climb into somebody else's heart and decide whether his kavon is l'shem shemayim or not? We've answered is you don't have to climb into his heart. You just have to look at the actions. It's not our business. Ani stories l'Hashem l'keinu. The hidden things belong to the Ribbono Shel Olam, not to us. V'haniglos lanu l'vaneinu. It's the revealed things that we can analyze. We can only analyze behavior and conduct. Has he tried to get the other person around to his way of thinking? If he has, if he's left no stone unturned in that effort, Hashem Shemayim is doing his best. He is not taking joy in the annihilation of his friend. He wants his friend to come around and he's prepared to let his own covered down. That's where the test is. When your covered's at risk, are you prepared to be moichel on your covered? Are you prepared to forego your honor and go down what appears to be a descent to try and get the other person to see it your way? If yes, the person's been mashpil himself, as Rashi said. He's prepared to go down. Mochal al kvedo, v'hu atzmoi holoch levatel ha-machlekes. He forwent his covered and he himself went to try and sort out the machlekes. That's the Shem Shemayim. You watch the conduct, you don't have to watch the heart. From the conduct, you can already see what's in the heart. If you have perception in your eyes, if you watch people meticulously, you don't have to prick the line inside them. Just watch. If you watch the little things down to the last detail, that's where you'll be able to see what's going on inside the mind. One stone left unturned, deep down he wants the other person to stay with his mistaken opinion. That's what he wants. Deep down he wants his opponent to fall. Not so if he leaves no stone unturned to bring his opponent around. In fact, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh points out that the Torah uses a beautiful word to describe Moshe's going to Dothan v'Aviram. Vayakom Moshe vayelech el Dothan v'Aviram, and Moshe arose and went to Dothan v'Aviram. Also, Rav Chaim, what does one to tell us? That he was sitting on a chair and he stood up? Do we need to know that? Vayakom, you might think that was a diminishment of his stature, but you should know that last stone being turned to bring that miserable wretch round to your way of thinking is vayakom. That's in fact an increase in stature. That's not a decrease in stature. Did it achieve anything? Dothan and Aviram did not apologize. And yet something did happen. Ulefisha holach Moshe lefitcho shel Dothan v'Aviram. And says the Medrash in the Yalkut Shimoni, because Moshe went to the entrance of Dothan and Aviram, he didn't go into their houses, by the way. That's not mechuyif to do. He went to their doors, stood outside. Because he did that, zocho lahatzil arbo tzadikim. Moshe Rabbeinu saved four tzaddikim, midino shel Gehenim, from the being judged in Gehenim. Shloisha b'nei Korach, three sons of Korach, v'oin ben Peles, and oin ben Peles. And from those three sons of Korach came great people, among them Shmuel Hanovi, ultimately. This almost futile step that had no chance of success but had to be done because that's the halacha. The din of machlokes is when you're involved in a machlokes, you leave no stone unturned to try and get the other person to come round to you. And Moshe did that, although it seemed absolutely hopeless. And for Dothan and Aviram it was hopeless, and for Korach it was hopeless. But not so for these four people. Asked the Medrash, what was the merit in the hands of the Bnei Korach, of the sons of Korach, that they managed to be saved? All very well to see what Moshe did, but they must have had something worthwhile as well. What happened? Shebashor show you Yoshvin etzel Korach Avien. When they were sitting next to Korach, Royin es Moshe, the Koyfshin es Pnei Bekarko. They looked up and they saw Moshe coming. Moshe bichvido yuveatzma. Moshe Rabbeinu walking towards their tent. And they became terribly confused and they put their heads down on the ground. They didn't know what to do. Omru, they said, if we will stand up for Moshe, we are disgracing our father. We're taking a side against our father. There's a mitzvah of kibud avayim. We can't do that. And if we will not stand for Moshe, It's already said, before an elderly man or a wise man you have to stand. So Moshe put them in the most terrible moral predicament. Are they going to stand for him or not? But they have to do something. They can't sit on the fence. And when a person is put into the predicament where he can't sit on the fence, that's when his moral stature starts developing. As long as you leave a person to sit on the fence, he can't make progress. Because there's only one place which is totally immoral, that's the fence. One side, the other side, as long as one can justify to oneself why one stands where one stands, good. One does the best one can. There's one thing which is indefensible, and that's sitting on the fence. And the B'nai Korach were able to sit on the fence. They didn't have to make any public statements. They supported their father, but at no stage were they required to come out openly against Moshe. Moshe takes that walk from his home, from his office, down the road to the home of Korach. And you can imagine all the hundreds and thousands of people watching Moshe Rabbeinu as he leaves his Beis HaMedrash. He walks and people are wondering, all this is going on. The reporters are there and the newsmongers are there and everybody's there. Where is he going? He's going in the direction of Korach, of Dothan, of Aviram. What's he going to do? Moshe walks. And Dothan and Korach's children look up and there's Moshe Rabbeinu. Eventually they reach the decision. Our decision is, we're standing for Moshe even though we're disgracing our father. We can't sit on the fence, and that's our decision. We have to take one side, we're taking Moshe's side. And they stood up for Moshe Rabbeinu. Because of that they were saved. And the earth didn't swallow them up. What caused that? Moshe caused that. Did Moshe know he was doing that? Perhaps deep down he did. We're told that Moshe knew Beruach HaKodesh that Shmuel was going to come, not because Korach would survive, but because Korach's children would do tshuva and survive. So deep down Moshe did know that b'nevuah. But that wasn't what motivated him to go and visit Korach. Sometimes we take a step because that's what's halachically required. We don't know what comes from that step. We can't figure out the consequences of the step. We can't figure out the consequences of a wrong step, and we can't figure out the consequences of a right step. It's far beyond this. All we can do is try and be sure that each step is correct, that each step is right, and the consequences come automatically. Moshe Rabbeinu looks at the halachas of Machlokes. He looks in his Shulchan Aruch, and he sees in the halachas of Machlokes, one of the halachas is, before the end, the very last sif, the very last paragraph, doesn't exist in our Shulchan Aruch. It existed in Moshe Rabbeinu's Shulchan Aruch. The very last paragraph in Hilchos Machlokes is, are you sure that you have left no stone unturned to try still to bring the other side around to you? Says Moshe Rabbeinu, one thing I haven't done is, I haven't gone to them. There's been discussion, there's been dialogue, they've come to me, the time is running out, the Ribbono Shel'olam is about to destroy them. Maybe they'll be so honored if I come to them. But they'll say, Moshe Rabbeinu, come in, have a cup of tea, we have an apology to make. Maybe. Moshe Rabbeinu goes, and four tzaddikim are saved as a result of that. We deal in matters of machlekes with matters that are aimdim beruma shaloylam, matters of very great consequence, matters that are very, very powerful. Machlekes hilul v'shamay, when two chachomin argue in a matter of halacha, that's what keeps the Torah going. When two chavrusas argue in pshat and rashi, when two rishonim argue in pshat and mishnah, that's what the Torah is all about. That machlekes is machlekes l'shem shemayim, and so may it continue. Each one trying desperately to bring the other around to his way of thinking because he believes he's right. If that goes, individuality goes. If we will ban machlekes, we will ban individuality. In fact, came to my full appreciation only recently that most parents of the people involved in Bas HaMedrash such as ours don't see much of a difference between and such an involvement in Yiddishkeit and involvement Chas V'Sholem Avdil in the Hare Krishnas or in the Moonies or anything else. It's one of these cult things going on all the time. What can you do? It's necessary to illustrate and to explain the differences. We don't realize to what extent the man in the street is under this impression. And in Yitz Hashem we're talking of planning an evening specifically for that purpose of inviting parents and others to an evening where we will actually go through in great detail what a cult is and what Torah is and how one doesn't have it. But here we have one of the concepts.
We encourage machlekes.
We want people to disagree. We don't want people all to agree. We don't want everybody to be the same. We don't want everybody to dress the same, to look the same, to think the same, to speak the same. That's not what we want. We want individuality, provided the machlekes is governed by the hilchos machlekes, by the laws of machlekes. Machlekes per se is not immoral. Machlekes per se is the guaranteed to enhance individuality. Machlekes shelo l'shem shamayim though is totally self-destructive. Machlekes shelo l'shem shamayim can destroy the participants and all who are around them. That one has to keep against and guard against. No cult in the world encourages machlekes. The concept of machlekes l'shem shamayim does not exist in the Shulchan Aruch of any cult. Every cult bans machlekes. Machlekes is evil. Not so with us. Machlekes is healthy, provided the one condition is observed, and that is that it's machlekes l'shem shamayim, where each party exerts whatever influence they can to bring the other side to their way of thinking, hoping in the end for agreement and peace rather than for destruction or self-destruction.